Welcome to Mountains Are For Moving, where ordinary people are doing extraordinary things. I'm Jacqueline Snyder, social activist with a master's degree in clinical psychology.
And I'm Susan Ramirez, founder and president of the nonprofit Austin Angels. We believe that each of us has the capacity to overcome even the most daunting of obstacles. Sometimes we just need a little inspiration. And that's what this podcast is all about. It's about hearing real stories from real people. It's about looking inside ourselves and standing up to the obstacles within us. We're happy that you're here.
This is episode 5, where you'll hear LaToya Collins-Jones share her experience with breaking barriers in the tech world as a woman of color. If you've been inspired by what you hear on this podcast, tell your friends and leave a review wherever you consume podcasts to help Jacqueline and Susan achieve the coveted new and noteworthy status. Thanks for joining us.
All right. LaToya, I'm so happy to be finally interviewing you. I was so excited when I met you just, what was it, like 2 or 3 months ago?
Yeah, actually it was. I think it was like July, August-ish.
It was hot. Maybe. It was really hot.
It was hot.
And we know each other through an organization called Be the Bridge. Mm-hmm. And this is an organization that focuses on racial reconciliation. And mm-hmm. it's mostly through, it's totally through the church, right? I mean, it's really, but we don't go to the same church, but it just brought together a bunch of different people.
This is true. Well, church is not confined to walls. So we do go to the same church. We just don't worship in the same building.
Good answer. That was a good answer.
Okay. So for those of us who do not know what this is, tell me a little bit about the organization and why you are involved with it.
Well, Be the Bridge, I just got involved. I know Latasha from, working with If Gathering with Jenny and that whole crew. And, I just think it's really important to tackle things head on. Jackie would say, we're fellow social deviants. And so I think it's always healthy to have conversations and be able to always challenge and always grow. So if I think or believe something, then, I think it's important to test it. And find some logic. Sometimes there's logic, sometimes there's not. Sometimes it's based on bias, but that's why I really migrated towards that organization. And I think Jackie and I had even shared when we first initially met, I was like, I get it. Sometimes it's not always easy to have that conversation. And as a person of color, I get sometimes it's sometimes hard to have a conversation with a person of color because you don't know, like you don't want to be offensive. And I've grown up in a pretty diverse background, how I grew up, my family. So I think it's just a lot easier for me to talk about it. And then also I try not to make things too awkward. Sometimes I make them awkward intentionally only because it's fun. But outside of that, I try to make sure that it's understanding.
And some say social deviant. I say social activist.
Yeah, something along those lines.
I told Susan I was so excited to interview you because you shared a lot that night about what it's like to be in your skin. I mean, so why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your background, and then we'll get to what you're doing now.
Yeah. So a little bit about my background. I'm a Texan. I was born in Texas, but I was born to teenage parents. My mom graduated high school early. But my parents are young. I won't say how old they are, but let's just say they're barely capping 50. And it's one of those things, my dad decided to join the Marine Corps to help take care of us. And his joining the Marine Corps afforded us an opportunity to get out of East Texas. So I'm from a very small town called Clarksville, Texas. Most of the time, most people don't know where it is. I have to reference a bigger, smaller town to get people even close to Clarksville. So a lot of times I'll say, hey, you know where Paris, Texas is? They're like, yeah. I was like, well, it's not Paris, Texas. It's like 30 miles south of Paris. And, you know, the town is so small, like Walmart shut down. Like that lets you know how small the town is. Black and white cemeteries, black and white churches is still very segregated. And actually, Latasha went out there and did a Be the Bridge in Clarksville. And I thought that that was super cool, considering that that's where I'm from and my roots are from there. But I had a fairly middle-class upbringing, being that, you know, I lived on base housing most of my life. So I usually went to schools where, yeah, I was for sure the minority, pretty much up until sixth grade. I was the only black girl, usually out of less than 10 black students. That was very interesting. Once I got to high school, it got a little bit better. And then, my father was stationed in New Orleans. And so I went from a predominantly, middle-class white upbringing, you know, as far as who I was around, to literally going to school with predominantly black kids. And it was very different. New Orleans was a culture shock of the lifetime, but it is by far one of my most favorite places I lived. You know, I went to school. I only applied at historically black colleges and universities. I did that intentionally. I got accepted into two of the top schools, but I opted to go to a smaller school because I didn't have a college fund and I didn't want my parents to pay for college. So I took a academic scholarship to a smaller HBCU in Augusta. And that's where I met my amazing husband, and we were college sweethearts. Kind of the rest is history. I grew up and all of that, but that's just kind of me in a nutshell.
Latoya, why was it important for you to choose to go to an all-black college?
A historically black college? Well, here's what I'll say. Anybody who's went to a historically black college will tell you there's no experience like the black experience. And it's not to be facetious or separatist, but there is a nuance and a culture that cannot be duplicated anywhere else. I'll tell you this, like historically black colleges, unless you go to one that's a state school, a lot of the private schools will teach you survival. I went to a small school. We had roommates, but we didn't have suites. We had community bathrooms. We didn't have pools. Our library wasn't 24 hours. It was important to me because I wanted that experience. And I think New Orleans, like moving to New Orleans, just opened my eyes to a whole nother world. You know, my background and my family were kind of sprinkled between kind of a whole lot of city, maybe even a hair hood to country. So like I've kind of got this mix between both. so it's kind of weird, but needless to say, you know, I wanted to broaden my world, and I am successful because I went to a historically black college. I am successful because I had a mentor who had my parents' phone numbers, who I could go to her house, and she was such a part of my life in very formidable years. And I don't think I would have gotten that experience at a Division I school. We're a family. I still keep in touch with if I had to say like all of my Facebook friends, I'd easily say 80% of them are people I've went to college with, you know? And that's just because we're a family, and there's just nothing like it. I can't even explain it. You just have to go one day. Jacqueline, we'll have to go down to like Prairie View one day.
I would love that.
And so now here you find yourself here in Austin.
Yeah.
Is not so much black at all.
Not quite.
How has that been?
Okay, you're gonna crack up. So here's the funny thing. So my husband and I, like I said, we met in Georgia, and you know, in Georgia, you know, it's, you know, a lot of times, you know, different areas is predominantly Black. And, you know, we moved to Austin, and the funniest thing ever was, like, we drove up to Chick-fil-A and there was, like, a white girl taking our money. Like, it was, like, the weirdest thing ever. Like, we were so tickled. We're like, this is crazy. Like, let's go to another place and see if this happens again. Because we're so used to, like, just seeing certain faces in certain jobs. Austin is, I'll say Austin's been good to us. Because I think, even though it does lack diversity in some areas, and then you have gentrification of the East Side, there are some nuances that just are going to occur because you're in the city. I think it's been very good to, I think, it's my only concern is it is becoming more tech, and with more tech comes certain ideologies with that culture. But you know, aside from that, I haven't had too many crazy experiences that I would say in comparison to Georgia. Like, if I had to pick between Georgia and Austin, it I wouldn't even think twice about it.
This is what I find fascinating. During that Be the Bridge meeting, you talked about some of these nuances that are in that tech world, because that's the world that you're in, mm-hmm. right? So can you mm-hmm. tell us about that?
Yeah, yeah, so I would even bridge to say not just tech, but the entrepreneurial space. Some of the nuances, I think, are, well, just kind of like a background of kind of understanding, like, business as a whole. You have, you know, white businesses, Hispanic, Asian, Black businesses, they're underperforming all of our counterparts in the minority space. And a lot of times in entrepreneurship, you know, we will find businesses and work businesses that have a low barrier to entry because of financing, right? And even something as simple as home ownership is a pathway to entrepreneurship. And these are things that are all kind of tied in together in these nuances. And, you know, I think there's a lot of entitlement that comes, especially in the tech world. I was asked in an interview once, did I think that the gender issue would be solved before the race issue in technology? And I said, hands down, the gender issue would be solved before the racial issue. Because if you look at where money goes and where money flows, it's going to go with people who look most like you and who you can relate to. At the end of the day, and this is a humble brag, but I think you could put me against any Harvard grad and I'd wax the floor with them. But because I don't have Harvard behind my name, or I don't have some D1 school, you know, some business school behind my name, it's so much nepotism and it's so bureaucratic. It's all about where you went to B school. But at the end of the day, it's like I've when I was at Dell, like, I was crushing people. And you don't know my college. I just know what I know. Like, you just won't outwork me, right? And so I think when people start to move out of nepotism and into a true meritocracy about what you can do and what you bring to the table, and realizing that the best way to grow your company is with diversity, then I think, you know, it'll be a different conversation. But I think it's easier to tackle women than it is to tackle race.
What do you mean? Can you elaborate a little more about how, like, diversity is beneficial to a company?
You get different points of view. So, I mean, you could even say gender, right? Like, it's really easy. I think it's really easy from a standpoint of if you view your world from your limited scope, right? So you have a perception of what it is to be a woman. You have your perception. If you're a white male, you have your perception of what it is to be a woman. You have a perception of what it is to be a person of color, but you really don't know because your lens is jaded, right? Like, and so you're going to build solutions from a very limited point of view, from very limited standpoints, right? There's actually a commercial that came out today that I think was like, I forgot what company, I won't even say what company it is, but it was like featuring a Black family and it was like, are you one of them? And it's like, what does that mean? Like, but likely what happened was you had somebody who was not represented in that room to say, hey, this could possibly be taken the wrong way, right? And so I just think you have different lived experiences that that can enrich different things. I have all different types of people around me because I think it makes me a better person, and it forces me to get outside of my own personal biases.
And can you tell us some of the stories, you know, that happened when you did break into this space where there aren't a whole lot of people that look like you?
Let me try to think of a story. So actually, yeah, I could think of one. So when I was in corporate, I was still, this is before I left and launched my company, we were in New York, schmoozing, some business guys. And, they took us to this elite cigar club, and we're up here. I mean, like, literally there are three people color in the entire cigar club. It's packed, right? And this cigar club is at the top of a building somewhere in like Manhattan, and like we go in and it's Donald Trump Jr., Wayne Gretzky, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, you name it, all these guys had cigar boxes in this place. So it's like top notch.
It's a good old boys club. Yeah.
Yeah, like it was like the real deal. And so it's myself and another individual who was a well-known entrepreneur. I was there, you know, with the company I was working with. And the only other person of color in the room was the server. Like, that was it. And we get there, and it was during the re-election year. It was during 2012. So it's during the election. So I won't say his name, but the other gentleman of color was arguing with the other guy that we were there with. And the guy was, you know, his business partner was like, well, you know, LaToya, what do you think? I was like, I'm not answering that question. First of all, I'm here with my job. And second of all, I don't care to talk politics. And especially with potential clients. And he's like, no, I just want to know. I was like, man, you don't want to go down this road. And he kept kind of pushing at me. I was like, here's the deal, man. Like, I don't want you to tell me what my lived experience is from your white point of view, right? Like, you're going to try to tell me how to solve my problems for your lens, which is, I don't talk politics with you, right? And so he goes on, he's like, well, I mean, most business owners make more than $250,000. So I was like, actually, you're incorrect. And so I end up running down all of these numbers off the top of my head. And one of my coworkers was like, yo, I told you not to mess with it. Cause she told him, hey, you don't want to walk down this path. At the time I was in my doctoral program studying technology implementation for African-American business owners for competitive advantage, which meant I knew those numbers off the top of my head because I had spent so much time in it. And after that, he was just like, he just didn't say anything. After I just obliterated him, and he's like, all right, so you want another drink? I was like, hey, sure, but just think twice next time you try to force somebody into a corner and have those conversations. But I mean, I think a lot of times in the tech world, the biggest issue is just because you have a black friend doesn't mean you understand the black experience. And that's probably the biggest issue that I have.
I would really love to, maybe I might loop that actually when I edit this episode. Because I can't tell you how many people I've heard, you know, say that, well, I have a black friend, or, you know, and it's like, that doesn't count really.
Yeah, no, it's just, yeah, it's totally not the same. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to where, you know, I have a circle of friends. When all this crazy stuff was going on in the summer and I was traveling, you know, we have like a group of us who have a WhatsApp, and you met Valerie. Valerie's in that group, but we were both traveling at the time when all of this stuff was going on. And so she's in East Texas and I'm in Houston, and I'm having to travel through Waller County to get back home. And just to understand, and we have a friend of ours who's she probably wouldn't care I mentioned her, but, you know, she's not black. And so, you know, through all this stuff, we're just venting on our little messaging, and she's just listening. And she was concerned for her. She's like, I hate it, because I literally changed my travel plans. I normally travel sometimes coming back from Houston to Austin at night. And my husband was like, nope, sorry, can't do it. You got to wait till the next day. So I stayed in Houston an extra day. And just for her to understand and start to really see what it's like at the end of the day, I can't be a black woman traveling by myself down the road. Because if something happens, I'm in the middle of nowhere between Houston and Austin, right? And, you know, it would take time for anybody, you know, if anything were to happen, I'd kind of be just out there. So it really is. I think she started to even understand even more what the Black experiences look like and how something as simple as I don't travel at night or I can't, you know, not traveling at night. Or if I'm traveling at night, I'm on the phone the entire 3 hours home just for safety purposes.
So LaToya, what do you think needs to happen in order for this to not be as prevalent as it is? So let's say, you know, do you have any children?
I have a 7-year-old daughter.
You have a 7-year-old daughter. And do you think, LaToya, that when she grows up and she's your age, that these will still be problems?
You want my honest answer? Yeah, I do.
And so what do you think needs to be done in order for this to not be the world that we live in? What do you think needs to happen?
So what I actually think needs to happen, I think the church needs to lead the conversation, but I'm not confident that that will happen. If I could be completely honest, I think, you know, in Australia, they actually had a day of apology for oppressing the Aborigines, like, right, the original Australians before they came over and colonized and the whole nine, right? And I think, you know, as a country, like, it's just like, yo, y'all kind of need to just get over it. Not really understanding the depths and the roots, not on both sides of the story, and really being okay with that and not trying to shy away from it. If I could be completely honest, I don't necessarily want a non-person of color fighting for my rights. Like, why am I fighting for my rights? You know, like, shouldn't I already have them? Like, why am I fighting for them? Like, I'm literally asking you for, not you, Jacqueline, but, like, you know, you guys. But I'm asking for permission to be a human. Like, the things that I was innately born with. Like, how absurd is that? Right? And, you know, I think for it to end, I don't think color blindness is the answer. I don't want people to say, oh, I don't see color. Like, I love all my beauty and glory of my melanin and my curly hair. Like, I love everything about being Black. I don't need you not to see that I'm Black. I need you to treat me the same way despite the fact that I'm Black. And when people can have those conversations openly and honestly and realistically about and be honest about their biases, I think that could be a starting point. But the church has to lead the way. I think we're failing worse than everybody else.
And so what does the church need to say? When you say the church needs to lead the way, are you saying that at the pulpit they need to say this?
Absolutely. Well, I mean, like, I can't, honestly, it's hard to worship sometimes with people who I know hold these views, and it's not political views. I don't have an issue with different political views. I actually enjoy arguing, I'll say debating. I think it's good to have healthy debates about different points of view. And, you know, I think it's fun, right? I don't want a world where everybody agrees with me politically. But I think also, you know, I said this in a post a couple of weeks ago, but for some reason, like, Christianity and patriotism have now become synonymous. And the church is all intertwined in that. And now we have opinions. But, like, last time I checked, like, our first allegiance is to God and to serve his people above everything else. And we don't live by that standard. We live by politics and patriotism, you know, like, and I'll go there. But, like, why are we so upset about somebody kneeling for a flag? A flag is an inanimate object. It doesn't hurt. It doesn't cry, doesn't have kids, doesn't reproduce, doesn't contribute to the society. It's paper, it's linen sewn together. But we have so much reverence and respect for an inanimate object. Yet to take a step back and say, man, like, are things still not the same that somebody, why? Like, we should be asking ourselves, man, why is he, it sucks that he has to kneel, that he has to feel like that's the way. Or he should find another way to protest. And it's like, well, if he's quiet, nothing happens. If I make noise, nothing happens. So it's a lose-lose situation. So, you know, I think the church has got to be honest about its own biases, you know, and you know, coming to terms with that. And I think, I feel like I'm talking too much, but I think.
No, no, I love all that you're saying. And I'm wondering, can you share with everyone about Summit Worship Center?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Summit Worship Center, it's an amazing church, and we're in North Austin. And we believe in having a multicultural, multi-generational church, and a church that has disciples who make disciples. And we're very intentional in what we do. And I'm proud to be on the leadership team there. And, you know, our goal is, you know, to grow in Christ, you know, find community, influence our sphere, and lead others. And that's, you know, that's just kind of how we, you know, we live our lives. And Pastor Eric has been like really gracious, you know, because I've learned how to, you know, definitely have these conversations, even with people within our church, about some of the things that they say via social media, and how, you know, unfortunately you can lose respect and kind of draw lines in the sand unintentionally by being so, I won't say it's political views. I think sometimes people don't realize their political views are rooted in undertones of racism and bigotry and other things. So how do you have those conversations? And he's been really awesome about leading the way. I mean, he didn't hold any punches back when you were there. So
no, he didn't. Yeah. I mean, both Caleb and I were so impressed. I mean, this is a church that has so intentionally created a space of welcome for everyone. And, you know, a lot of churches say they want to do that, but I don't really feel like they pull it off quite as well as I felt at Summit. And something that I just thought was so amazing was when, well, actually it just so happened, remember that morning there was another shooting.
Yeah, there was. That? Yeah, there was. Yep.
Yeah, it was amazing. And Pastor Eric just stopped everything and said, you know, we need to pray. And the thing that was so beautiful to me is, you know, I think in our world right now, there's this idea that, you know, you're either on the side of Black Lives Matter or you're on the side of the police.
Yeah.
That's just not true. And he was a beautiful picture of that, because he had us praying for every police officer or family member or loved mm-hmm. one in that church right then. We stood up and he had all those people prayed over and, you know, prayed for their safety and just prayed for healing and restoration. And it was so amazing, because, you know, and it wasn't 10 minutes later that he talked about one of the tenants that's in Be the Bridge to the whole congregation, you know, and he's been really starting that conversation. So, yeah, I think Susan, you know, what she was getting at about having the leadership, you know, lead the way in this, I think it's gotta be that way. And he was such a great picture of that. And it's obvious that you have been a vital role in the church taking that stance.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think some of it too is you know, being pro-Black is not mutually exclusive to being pro-police, right? Like, they don't have to be exclusive. And most times they're inclusive, right? Like, I can say that, you know, I love you, Jackie, but, like, I don't want you to punch me in my face, right? Like, they can both exist, right? Like, it's that thing, right? Like, it's not that we're saying, like, yo, like, at the end of the day, you know, I appreciate law enforcement. You know, my father was a Marine. He's a vet. I appreciate our veterans and the sacrifices that they make. But I'm also saying I kind of don't like the way things are looking right now. And, you know, the truth is what the truth is. And, you know, I think it's just really easy to stay in denial, right? Like, when you have, and you and I have talked about this before, where, you know, I think it's just coming to a point where I can say personally for myself, it's just, I can't continue. I feel like when I shy away from telling the truth, I continue to perpetuate the problem. I'm not helping, right? Like, I'm not helping the person who continues to call me LaTanya after I explain my name is LaToya. Like, And I was like, man, forget it. No, like, call me by my name correctly, right? So it's those little things that I think we just can't shy away from, right? And I'll dare to say, I was joking around with my dad, but I was like, man, like, could you imagine, like, if Jesus came back today? Like, he probably would, and it was a joke. I have a sadistic sense of humor, so before I say this, people probably, don't be upset, people. But, like, Jesus probably get pulled over, like, stop and frisk. Like, he was a dark-skinned dude. Like, like, he might be in trouble, you know? Like,
wait, what? My nativity scene is wrong? I thought Jesus was white with blue eyes.
Right. Yeah. Like, Christianity did not begin in America. Popular belief, but you know, it's those little things. Like, I would wonder if we would recognize him, if we would be so caught up in just the outer that we would miss so much of him and what he looks like. It's just, I don't know. Like, I think that there'd be a lot of sad people once they, you know, realize that he possibly doesn't have blonde hair and blue eyes.
Right. So I'm curious, Latoya, how has all of this, like, tension and, I mean, obviously this is brought to our society's awareness now. I mean, for the mm-hmm. most part, it's in the news all the time. I mean, how is this affecting you as a businesswoman?
Well, I'll say this. I think there's this ongoing joke. I'm going to give you guys a black secret. I'm sorry, Black Twitter and everybody else. But, like, there's this ongoing joke that, like, some days you just want to call in black, right? You just be like, yo, I just can't do it today, right? Like, you know, a lot of times when all of this stuff is going on, we're mourning. Like we're mourning. And, you know, things just aren't back to normal. Like, I think a lot of times it's so easy to think, okay, well, it's on the news. It was just another news story. But, you know, there are a lot of people of color, especially black men, who are dealing with PTSD and, you know, the depression. Lecrae came out and talked about it in an article last week about the effects that it was having on him and trying to reconcile this church who, like, raised him up to this mega superstar, and the minute he comes out in support of Black Lives Matter, all in the same breath, tore him down, and he became depressed from it. And I mean, I can honestly say, like, it's hard. And as a businesswoman, I've had to kind of walk this line. But I think for myself, I'm choosing to be all of me. Now, like, I won't compartmentalize for people's comfort, right? Because it's uncomfortable for you. I think in business, a lot of people are losing business because of it. I'll say that. I definitely think that's occurring. Because I don't want to do business with a racist. I'm just being honest, right? So if you're coming out and, you know, it's not just political views, but it's like some of the things that you're saying lets me know what kind of mindset you have. You're not inclusive. You're not, I just can't. Like, I just can't and I won't. Because at the end of the day, I think it's important. I just think it's important that you kind of align yourself. And I'm pretty sure there are some people who may not like some of the things that I say as well. But, you know, I usually, if I say something, I'm backing it up with facts and numbers. So when I usually say it, it's because it's well researched. But I mean, like, I love Ben and Jerry's ice cream now. That's the only ice cream I'll ever buy. And that's simply because they came out in support of Black Lives Matter and really understood, you know, systemic racism, and even wrote an article. And I'm pretty sure some people who won't buy Ben and Jerry's, but the black dollar is worth over $1 trillion. So wow. that was a smart move on their part. It might have been a business decision, but I'm not mad.
So you mentioned about compartmentalizing earlier. You want to tell our listeners about your next business venture?
Yeah. I'm launching a t-shirt company called I Am One. And the premise behind I Am One is that one person in one given moment can create an infinite amount of possibilities, right? It's in those moments that we have to step up, to speak up, to say something. It creates this infiniteness that can happen, right? Like it opens the door beyond our wildest dreams when we take a moment to listen, right? You know, even, you know, if we have somebody who, it's easy to alienate somebody you love who's completely ignorant, but that's the easy thing to do. The hard thing is to love them and coach them through it, right? And I find myself doing that and not getting upset, but I am one tease. And, you know, the goal and vision is like once we get up and running and off the ground that we're tithing 10% to causes, you know, and that's just something that's really passionate about me. We've been identifying a couple of nonprofits. I do have a line called the Black Edition. And it's there's Black Lives Matter shirts in there. There's Black Girl Magic shirts in there. But there's also other parts of me. I'm a mom and I'm an entrepreneur. And I'm a person of faith. And so you'll also find all of those shirts in there. And so I Am One is also, it's also kind of this thing where I'm one person. I'm not an entrepreneur. And then I turn off the hat and then I'm a mom. And then I turn off the hat and I'm a social activist and I speak out against injustices. Right? Like I'm one person, right? Like, and I can't compartmentalize. And I think it's just, you know, it's just kind of a homage to all of those things. It's a homage to all of me and my own little idiosyncrasies and things like that. So that's kind of my next project outside of all the other stuff that I do.
I love that. When are you launching that?
They'll probably, I'm heads down. The goal is to have it actually launched here in the next couple of days. And it'll be iamone.co, I believe. Don't quote me on that just yet, but I'm pretty sure that's the URL. I should know that. I'm the tech person. I have so many URLs. yeah.
Latoya, how much are your t-shirts going to range?
The t-shirts, they range anywhere between, like they're right around the 24, 25 mark. And that's just because they're American Apparel. Like they're nice shirts. They're not like cheap. Yeah, they're American Apparel, Next Level, you know, Bell and Canvas. So they're really high quality shirts. And then all the way up to sweatshirts. And sweatshirts are usually about 45, 47 for the sweatshirts. And that's just so like, I don't go broke like selling them.
And so 10% of the proceeds are going to go to charities that you choose. Are you going to highlight the charities? Are you going to pick a new charity every month?
Yes. Or? Yeah. So there's probably the Black Edition specifically will go to an organization that supports inner city youth or education or, you know, kind of broadening that. But everything else will likely just be a nonprofit of my choice or, you know, probably eventually, you know, it's like some type of grant, but the goal is to give back. And I think what's really cool is knowing that, you know, money from the shirts allows you to be a part of the solution. So you become a part of the infinity just by buying a shirt, right?
Right.
So the fact that you say yes to a shirt means that you're part of creating this infinite change in the world, and going from there. So yeah, so we'll be donating 10% of our profits.
Latoya, I like what you said. I'm an action person, and so I like that you're giving us some action steps that our listeners can say. You know, not everybody that's listening is a part of a faith community, and so they might not be a part of going to church, and so they might not ever hear these words being spoken to them. You know, likely every time they turn on the TV, it's something latest, greatest with the Kardashians. Like we're not hearing the good news that needs to be told. Mm-hmm. So there's millions of people that, you know, are going to just continue to go on with life and they're never going to hear this. So I think it's an awesome opportunity to give people action steps who care about people, but they might not be associated with faith. And so you're giving people the ability to say, you can make a change right now by doing this. Mm-hmm. And so giving people the empowerment and the next steps is everything.
Yeah, I Am One is actually it's massive in my head. But t-shirts are kind of that first step. After that I want to go after the kids. And that's just because I think that they're gonna lead the way. They have to, right? And if we can help model that and plant those seeds of goodness and plant those seeds of humanity in them early. I think that that's just kind of, you know, where we can start it and where we can grow and, you know, as a people, as one, as a church, as a body, as a country, as humanity, so to speak.
That is so, so exciting. I love me a good t-shirt and I love putting my money toward a good cause, you know?
Does she have a website?
Absolutely.
Latoya, do you have a website that we could share?
Yeah, actually, like I've been like, when I tell you I've been under the gun this week, I have, a blog that I had been semi afraid to launch. But it will likely be fully up and running, come tonight or tomorrow, actually.
do it before next Thursday. But,
my blog, just the best way to get in touch with me, like I'll have a link to I Am One there and also to like my consulting business, which is digital strategy. But my website is going to be, it's called Geek Pray Love.
Love that. You're so awesome.
Yeah, so it's geekpraylove.com.
Susan took a picture of me and my headphones, and I was like, this is the first time I feel like I can actually use hashtag girl boss, but you are like the epitome of girl boss. Like, you're so awesome.
Hey, look, everybody has it in them. I think every mom, you know, or woman is like, we have all types of entrepreneurship in us. Like, it just comes out, you know, in different ways. And, it's, you know, I think the biggest thing is just doing it afraid. And the more you do it afraid, like, it just gets easier. One of my favorite, I'll leave you guys definitely with one of these, but one of my favorite sayings says, feed your faith so your fears starve to death. And every day, like, I just want, like, my fears to just starve. And so I feed my faith, and the way you do that is you take action. You know, faith is an action. It's not this thing where we just sit and pray, and we do sit and pray and ask God to intervene, but, you know, the very act of faith requires levels of action on our part.
I love it. Thank you so much. This has been
eye-opening.
Yeah, this has been a really great conversation. Is there anything else that you want to share before we close out?
Yeah, I always say, find a way to love somebody. And it's just such a big part. I believe in love, and I think love is the answer to all. And as cheesy as it is, you know, Christ said the greatest commandment that he gives us is to love, and that they'll know that we are his disciples by how we love one another. And if we take the time to love our neighbors as ourselves, then I think this world will be a way, way better place. And I just want it a better place than the way, you know, we want to leave our kids an amazing legacy of love and humanity. And so that'll be it.
Thanks, Latoya. I think Susan just has fallen in love with you a little bit.
The whole time you've been talking, I've been shaking my head like, that's right.
Well, you know, I'm always down to come back and chat with you guys. It was awesome.
Oh,
it was so much fun.
I'm serious about that t-shirt too. I really want a Mountains Are For Moving t-shirt, but you better believe I'm going to be hitting you up for all your other stuff too. Are you going to have kid sizes?
Yeah, so actually, I am. My kiddo, I wasn't going to launch kids, but she ended up, she said she wanted a shirt that said future entrepreneur.
You are raising that girl right.
I've got to do it now, so.
I love it. Oh, thanks so much, Latoya. This has been such a great conversation. Like, I just, the thing I love about you, maybe I said this already at the beginning, but you know, you can go deep, you're wicked smart, but you're also fun and hopeful, and like Susan said, you're a woman of action. So it's really inspiring, and I'm really thankful to be your friend.
Oh, no doubt. Like, I appreciate the opportunity that you guys thought of me and I got to hang out with you guys. So I'll be looking forward to more chats. You know, I'll be waiting for you guys to have your online show, and you guys are going to be in video. We're going to be like all together hanging out. So
you're going to get us all hooked up.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Latoya.
Hey everyone, Jacqueline here. Thanks so much for tuning in this week, and I have a very exciting announcement. Susan and I have finally found a professional recording space that we will be using for the future of our podcast. And this, of course, will result in a high quality, consistent audio sound that we are just really excited about. We want to thank you all for the support that you've shown us thus far. It's just been overwhelming and very encouraging. We hope that you've enjoyed all that you've heard. Please remember to leave us a review in iTunes. We're really trying to get those reviews by the sixth week. We want to thank Greg Myers for composing the original music for this podcast. And as always, we'll leave you with the wise words from Paulo Coelho from the book The Alchemist. There's only one thing that makes a dream impossible to achieve: the fear of failure. Thank you again, everyone.